You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Outdoor Edge in their complete lineup of knives and game processing kits. These guys right now are doing an absolutely huge giveaway where you could win an elk hunt, and not just any elk hunt. We're talking about a 7 or 8 mile horseback ride into the backcountry. We're talking a one-on-one guided hunt. You're going to be sleeping in a wall tent, and you're going to be doing that for 5 days with the founder and CEO of Outdoor Edge, David Block. Now, if you've never been on an elk hunt before, I'm telling you right now, go sign up for this, because if you ever hear a elk bugle, whether it's at 400 yards or it's at 40 yards, it is a life-changing experience. So here's how you enter. Go to OutdoorEdge.com. There's going to be a big banner for it somewhere on their homepage. All you have to do is click on that. Go fill out some information. I think your name, your email address, maybe some other stuff. And that's all you have to do. That's how you are entered. They're going to be picking a winner, a ways from now. So you have plenty of time to enter. Go visit OutdoorEdge.com. Sign up today. And if you decide to purchase any products from the website, enter the discount code NATION30. That's the word NATION with the number 30 after that. No spaces. NATION30. And you will receive 30% off your purchase.
Welcome to the Transition Wild Podcast, brought to you by Expedition Archery. I'm your host, Adam Parr, and you're listening to episode number 75. Where I talk with Fred Bohm on his 2020 midseason recap. Hello, how are you? Thanks again for tuning into the Transition Wild Podcast, your source for everything Western big game hunting. I am pretty full right now. I just got done mowing on some mule deer burger. I process everything myself and do everything at home. So I got the meat grinders, vacuum sealers, all the processing equipment, knives, all that good stuff, and I am fat and happy right now after having some fresh, lean, organic, high country mule deer. I tell you what, I was talking with my buddy Will a couple weeks ago, and we were discussing high country mule deer. He was telling me about how good his deer taste, and I was like, well, I've never had it before, and I was like excited to try it. And man, after having some of the back straps and then now having some of the burger, I can tell you with 100% certainty that high country mule deer, when they're eating all those good grasses and just kind of fat and happy, not stressed out through those summertime months, man, it is some really, really good tasting meat. So if that doesn't get you fired up to maybe try to go chase some high country muleys, I don't know what will, but I highly recommend it. So I've been processing meat the last couple days. I took the weekend, and Saturday I pretty much boned everything out, cut up all the steaks, did everything on that part. And then on Sunday I spent a few hours just grinding the meat and vacuum sealing it and packaging it all up. So it feels good to just have that in the freezer and off my plate, and now I can put it on my plate so I can actually eat it, which is always good. So I hope you guys are having a good fall so far, having some success. I love seeing all the photos on Instagram and Facebook and following along. A lot of people I've seen just driving around some of my elk spots. I didn't archery elk hunt this fall, just time constraints and you know, my schedule conflicts and everything, and also putting my eggs in all the in the mule deer basket. I got a rifle season tag coming up, but seeing, driving around, taking people up to the cabins, just being out in public lands, there's a lot of people out, but it seems like I'm seeing more success. Like I'm seeing a lot more bulls in the back of the truck, which is, I don't know if it's a good thing. It kind of makes me, it's like, you know, that could have been me, but it's always cool to see, and hats off to everybody that's getting it done, especially in Colorado. It's not easy. Colorado is very pressured. The elk are tough to get on, and it's been dry. It's been tough moving around and just not a lot of food. So it can be tough out there, and it's been hot, you know, other than like the second week of September, that week after Labor Day, we had some snow and some cold weather, but ever since then, it's just been kind of hot, bluebird days, not a lot of weather going on. So that can make it tough as well, but congrats to all the guys and gals out there getting it done and making it happen. That's really cool. All right, my guest today, Fred Bohm, he's been on the show, I don't know, maybe at least two times before this, maybe three. I can't remember, can't keep track, but I really enjoy talking to Fred. He's a one-of-a-kind dude, badass photographer, a great hunter, amazing writer. I love following his work on his website, and just a cool guy to talk to. He hunts a ton. He gets outside a lot. And just a really, really interesting guy. And I love hearing his stories. And so this, I didn't really have like a topic in mind. I've had him on for some strategy stuff and backcountry hunting. We've talked about photography. This was a little bit more of just a BS session about his hunting season so far and all the hunts he's done. He's hunted in Hawaii. He had a bighorn sheep tag he was chasing with a bow, a couple elk hunts. He's antelope. He's got whitetail hunts coming up. I mean, it's just really, really fun to talk with him about all the different things he does and hear the stories. So that's what this episode's about. Fred's an awesome dude, so let's not wait any longer. Let's get Fred Bohm on the line. Before we begin, today's episode is brought to you by Expedition Archery, manufacturer of the world's finest archery experience. Expedition bows combine aerospace level quality, innovative designs, and a fluid feel serious hunters demand. Test drive one today at your nearest archery retailer and view their full lineup at expeditionarchery.com. Why settle for status quo when opportunity and adventure awaits? Make your next hunt an expedition. All right, on the line with us now, Fred Bohm. How you doing, Fred?
Great, Adam, man. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, no problem. I guess I should rephrase, how are you doing? I know how you're doing right now. You just killed two elk in the past, like, 2 weeks, so you got to be feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I'm not complaining there, man. That freezer was looking pretty low, and, pumped, ecstatic to be able to do so. So, yeah, that's super cool.
I bet. That will definitely fill the freezer. That was one of my questions. I was like, do you even have enough freezer space to even continue hunting the rest of the year, or are you just going to call it quits?
Well, it's crazy. On the second elk, I called the wife, and I'm like, you know what? That freezer, we have a big lay-down chest freezer in the garage, and I'm like, you got to start cleaning some of the kids' crap out of there because we got some real meat coming in. But, yeah, hopefully I'm getting the second one butchered right now. I think they're going to fit. I think so. And the way we consume wild game here at the house, between us and our friends, we'll burn through it pretty quick.
Well, one of the coolest things is about having that much wild game is then you really have the opportunity to enjoy it with friends, or like, oh, you meet somebody, hey, try this out. Or, you know, if you ever had wild game before, I just remember when I shot my elk back in 2016, how much excess meat I had. And it was just, that was one of the coolest things about it, is like introducing people to elk meat, or if they've never had it before, it was just really cool. I really enjoyed that.
100%. And that is the best part. Cause a lot of people, they may not be on the fence. Like they're meat eaters type of things. So, all our friends are pretty much that, cause they know I hunt, but, it's nice to kind of have something like, okay, we're going to have like a dinner party and people are trying this, like, oh my God, it's amazing. And then you start talking about the health benefits of eating, you know, wild game as opposed to something that's, you know, factory farmed type of thing. And it can really change some viewpoints, and people that never thought that they would eat something like that, they try it and are, you know, kind of blown away by the flavor. And, you know, especially the fact that my wife really knows how to cook, that certainly helps as well. It's a great way to introduce people to hunting, and then, you know, then the questions start coming in, and that's a cool way to, you know, open up that conversation. So
it is, yeah, it's like a very good entry point or a conversation starter for a number of things that go along with it, like conservation and where the money goes. It's not just a blood sport. It's, this is what it is. And it kind of, like you said, you can kind of not sway people. That's, I don't want to use that term, but it's just a good way to explain our lifestyle and why we do it and all the benefits that come from it.
Exactly. And then they get to partake of it firsthand and actually eat it, like, oh, okay. And then, like you said, this isn't just a blood sport. It's not just about the heads on the walls. This is, you know, something that you explain, like, hey, the kids eat this. You know, we eat this. We don't buy red meat. We rarely buy, you know, we buy some fish and chicken here and there and that type of stuff. But, you know, we even supplement that with Upland. So, you know, they kind of get to see this whole lifestyle and they get to partake of it. So, yeah, it is cool.
What's your favorite game meat to eat?
Oh, man. You know, it depends what we're cooking. Like, some odd ones, I love elk. You know, that's a standard. Elk, coos deer is really, really good, too. Grouse would definitely be on the top of that list. I mean, but I love them all. You know, I'll definitely, whitetail's great. I love antelope. I'm not going to say no to any of it, but, you know, and that elk is the king. It kind of is. You know, those, you get yourself a real good, you know, just, I mean, medium rare backstrap, and it's hard to beat that.
Yeah, 100%. I was talking with, well, you know, Will from Outdoor Edge, marketing manager. He shot a high country mule deer a couple years ago, and I just shot mine a couple weeks back, and he was talking about, like, man, that high country mule deer is just, like, so good. It's, like, on a different level. And I was like, huh, I've never had a high country mule deer. I shot one with a rifle a few years ago, and it was pretty good. But honestly, I preferred whitetail over it. But then I just dove into a backstrap off of this deer, and I was blown away, man. It was really good. I'd put it up there with an elk backstrap even. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, no, and I agree. Absolutely. Muley, I think it's phenomenal, especially the high country where they're not really getting into the sagebrush, that type of thing. There's not going to be game, you know, wild game that I'm going to turn down, especially with the way the wife cooks. So, you know, she could make anything taste good. So I'll have to give her credit there. But I love it all, man.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So two elk, basically what, like 10 days apart, something like that, a week? What was
that? It was somewhere between. I'd have to figure out the exact days. But yeah, I'd say somewhere between 7 and 10 days. It was crazy. So I was hunting. I got just a general season tag up in Wyoming this year. So that just gave me, you know, and like the summer I went out with a couple buddies and we went bear hunting, and I used that as a,
scouting,
you know,
trip.
You know, so we went out, we saw some bears and whatnot, but it was really just to jump a bunch of mountain ranges, you know, of course did the online, the e-scouting and whatnot, but we're like, let's get up there. Let's take a look. These are guys that, you know, throughout the years are going to be hunting up there as well. It's a great alternative to, you know, as Colorado hunters, to be able to switch something out and not just do the OTC tags here. So I jumped up there and got a little bit of an idea and then just spent a lot of time up there. I was blown away. Like, they were talking. So that storm that hit earlier, was it maybe late?
Right after Labor Day.
Yeah, exactly. And that I got up there the day before that. And that storm just kicked them off. I would say out of the years I've been hunting out west here, I got more calling and bugling and just action in those 4 or 5 days than I had the rest of the time I've been out here. It was unbelievable. It was all day. I mean, I was exhausted just going from bull to bull and screwing stuff up and, you know, just learning, honestly, a ton, because it is repetition, right? Like, you got to get in there and get the reps in to really learn. You know, I've called a bit before, but I just didn't get that many opportunities, I would say, because I concentrate on, you know, other animals as well.
Yeah.
Not just an exclusive elk guy. So the time I've been able to really, you know, I've only ever hunted elk in Colorado here. So I feel like they maybe, you know, they don't talk as much, I guess. But, you know, that storm just, wow, it kicked them off. And I was just running around. I was having a blast. But
that sounds fun.
Oh, it was great. Then came back for work for, you know, a couple of days. And then, you know, the wife sees me pacing around the house and I'm just doing the typical thing I do in September or, you know, honestly, every month of the year when it comes to hunting.
Yeah.
And she's like, go. She's like, get out of here. You're useless. You're not doing anything. She's like, get back up there.
Your mind is somewhere else.
Exactly. And at this point, I mean, I hadn't, you know, the freezer was running low. So the second time up there, I'm like, you know what, whatever I see that's legal up there, which, you know, with this tag was with either sex, I'm like, if it's good animal, I'm going to take it. And, spent a couple days bugling other hunters in, that type of thing, and but was having fun with it. And then I just was one day was just sitting a wallow, and I'm like, something's gonna come here. I had myself tucked in. I pull up my phone. I'm reading, you know, a Kindle book on there, and a couple cows just come plowing in, and I don't know, maybe 15 yards from me. I'm like, yeah, this is gonna happen. So drew back, shot her. I don't know, she ran maybe 30 yards, packed her out of there, came back home. And just took a couple more days off, you know, doing some work and whatnot. And same exact story, you know, pacing around. And I'm like, you know, well, I could pick up an OTC tag. I mentioned that to the wife, and she's like, just do it. She's like, get out of here. So I go up on a last Wednesday. I shot out to an area I'd previously hunted before, you know, just slept in the back of the truck. And I'm like, yeah, I'll get out in the morning and see what I can do. So get up, start hiking in a good bit before shooting hour. You know, I knew the area I wanted to get to, so I wanted at least a half hour to get up towards there. And then at that point, just, you know, let out a little weak bugle just to see if anything was around. And something else leapt back at me, and, you know, a bull just kind of threw a weak one at me. So I knew something. I knew I couldn't go aggressive on him. So started cow calling, and he was responding really well to that. So I did a bunch of cow calling over this ridge, and then just ran my ass off towards him and set up by a pine tree and just waited. And I hear crunching and snapping branches, and, you know, everything, and like everything's looking up. I look through my binoculars, and there he is. He's about 200 yards out through this perfect aspen glen. Just making his way towards me. And I hear, you know, branches snapping all around me. So I know there's cows in there as well. I had the wind perfect. And I just wait. So, you know, I see him coming in towards me and eventually get to 80 yards. I'm like, all right, Fred, just calm down. You're not taking an 80-yard shot. Just do its thing here. And I'm not making a peep because I'm like, at this point, he knew the cows were, you know, where I was calling was probably about 100 yards behind me. He was headed that direction. You know, he gets to 55, and I'm like, perfect. All right, hold up, hold up. He's going to come closer. And there was a little clump of these aspen trees where I'm like, okay, if he goes behind that, you know, I range it 30 yards, perfect. Well, his head goes behind that, so he can't see me. I get a perfect opportunity to draw. He pops out the other side, and just give him a little chirp. He just stops, and, just pinwheeled him at 30
That's
yards.
That's amazing.
And, yeah, barely ran. I mean, it was a massacre, the amount of blood. So he didn't make it far. And that was by 7:30 the first morning I hunted in Colorado. So complete luck. You know, sometimes you spend weeks out there and you don't see a thing, and you're getting hosed left and right. And sometimes, you know, the first morning you go out, you get something. So you never know.
That's how it works. Yeah. I'm usually a last day, last dollar guy myself, but this past year with the first morning, first stock of my mule deer hunt, I had one on the ground. I couldn't believe it. It never works out that way for me, but I'll take
it.
No
kidding. Yeah, exactly. That's it. When it's handed to you, I mean, just, you know, thank your lucky stars. And don't expect it to happen again anytime soon.
No, exactly.
So, yeah, that was it. You know, and that was two good ones down, and, you know, super pumped on that, especially after a brutal bighorn sheep season for me. So
yeah, for sure.
It was great.
Yeah. I want to talk about that here in a bit. In regards to elk hunting, I remember a couple years ago, or maybe last year, I don't know. You shot a bull previously in Colorado. Was that last year or was that the year prior?
Year prior. Last year I was in a good bit on, I think I got out only 2 days elk hunting last year. It was primarily muley, and I had a, you know, big mule deer hunt, and it was a year before that with one of my hunting partners. We doubled down, shot two bulls within 10 minutes, 15 minutes of each other. Yep.
Yeah, I remember that, you and Joe. And
yep.
I remember on one of the posts about that hunt, or maybe it was in one of your articles about that hunt, you said something along the lines of, like, you know, archery elk hunting was just tough, and you damn near gave it up for a while, or you just, like, you're like, man, this is just not going to happen because you've been chasing them for year to year and just not having luck on them. I guess over the last couple of years, obviously you shot that bull a couple of years ago, got a nice bull this year, the Wyoming cow. Have you done anything differently? Have you changed strategies? Are you just the luck is maybe kind of coming through? Talk to us a little bit about that.
No, I definitely switched some stuff up. And one of the things was just lost the fear of calling. Like, I was always kind of nervous, like, oh, I'm going to screw something up, you know. And honestly, like, it started listening to, I'm sure you've heard of Paul Madel.
Yeah.
Elf Nut. Yeah. Yep. So he's, you know, started listening to his stuff and, you know, getting into, just learning a ton from him and then just going out there and applying it and saying, you know, what the hell? Like, I'm not getting them otherwise. Get out there, start calling, start learning what, how to call, when to call certain ways, you know, what the animal's saying and what I should be responding with, when I need to move in on the animal or when the animal's actually going to come to me, you know, depending if I'm going for a bull or a cow. So yeah, calling has absolutely changed in the last couple of years. That would be the big one. And then the other one is, honestly, it's just flip-flopping what I've always done. And with the backcountry game getting to be such a popular thing, that's what everybody wants to do these days, I've just given up elk hunting wise. I mean, I do that with some of the other animals, you know, mule deer and that I'll still hike in camp. And obviously, you know, bighorn did the same thing, but, working off of the roads, working off the dirt roads, whether it be calling early in the morning, getting up at 4:30 and calling, just going down the road, you know, until I get a bugle or just working off of that. And then, cause those days when I go in with a really, really light pack, I could cover 12 miles, no problem.
Yeah.
Get back to the truck. And if nothing happened, I'm off to a new area. Whereas when you get so committed, when you're carrying, you know, if you say you're going in for 10 days and you got 65, 70 pounds on your back with all your food and your gear and so on and so forth, you get into a valley, you're committed, you know, and that, I've done that a bunch of times. And then once you get in there, you're like, man, I don't want to go back to the truck and go up another valley and go through this all again. And B, I'm not pulling all my stuff up and jumping to the next camp. It's just, you end up getting lazy. As odd as it sounds with backcountry hunting, you end up getting lazy. You get in an area and you're like, well, I'm just going to hunt this area. Well, if it's getting beaten up by other guys or there just aren't elk there, man, that makes it tough. Whereas jumping around in the truck nowadays, it's just so much more, you know, it just gives you more opportunities that, I don't know, if they're not in one area, you could get to the next.
Yeah, I completely agree. One, the calling game, I need to really step up. I've listened to like some podcasts on it and listened to like the Rich Outdoors with Cody when he has
yep.
Paul on, and those have been really good. But did you end up buying his app and going through the course, or are you just kind of
listening
and I did. To his stuff?
Yeah, I did the app, and I think that's great. But honestly, the stuff on the Rich Outdoors is typically, yeah, with Cody, I listened to a bunch of Paul when he was on there, and he's on a couple other different podcasts as well. But he gives you all the information there.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. So if somebody doesn't want to spend that money, it's great to have it all right there. So you're like, oh, what was the sequence again? Bam, you push the button. You know, he's calling and telling you all about it. So I think the app is great.
Yeah.
But he, I mean, this guy is not afraid to give away free information.
he just loves
on the podcast.
It.
He does. I mean, yeah. You can see, listen to the passion in that guy's voice. Like he'll crack you up, like how yeah. into it he is. So.
I know. Yeah, really is. And then too, the mobility thing I think is huge. I've changed that up. I haven't actually done a lot of archery elk hunting in the last couple of years. I've always been taking friends out and family and been getting them on elk and stuff. So next year is really the year I'm really going to dedicate a lot of time. But the whole mobility thing, especially with us being residents of Colorado or an elk state, it does bode well to just getting into more action. Like you said, if plan A, B, C, D doesn't work out, I mean, you can always drive somewhere else and just try to cover
sure.
more ground that way. I think it's a really smart idea.
Exactly. And the thing is, elk, you know, maybe I was naive in the beginning. You would think like, okay, somewhere around September 19th-ish, the elk are going to start sounding off. Well, it's not like they get a memo and the whole state just starts bugling. There's areas, if there's a hot cow in the area, they're going to start doing that. So, like, you know, I mean, you could jump, you'll hear some guys are, you know, hunting the northern areas, and they're like, they're going crazy right now, and, you know, somebody else is down south, like, I haven't heard a bugle yet. Like, it's just, so it gives you that ability to. And, yeah, exactly, with our OTC tags where we're not limited, like, we don't have to pick a unit for it. We could just jump around the state. If something's not working here, you get a storm over there. Like, you could just, you know, kind of bop around and whatever's looking best wherever, and you just kind of drive over there and have at it.
Yeah, for sure. And I like the scenario in Wyoming, too, where you actually just sat over a wallow. It sounds like you were playing the chase game, covering some miles, and then, you know, you find the sign and you set up, too. That's a really effective strategy. I like that.
It is, and I don't do that too often, but it was just one of those days, like, it was hot, and I found, like, I hadn't found many wallows, and this one looked like it got plenty of use. It was in a good area. I was kind of getting tired of bumping into other hunters and calling them in this particular place I was at, and I was ready to shoot a cow as well, so I figured, you know, whatever came into that. And it was a good setup. So it was midday. It was hot. Nothing was really going on. And you could just kind of kick back in the shade. And like I said, read a book. And I just had everything set up and ready to go. And I just heard the whole, you know, boom, 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 coming down the mountain.
Yeah, gotta love that.
Put my phone down. Just got ready to jaw and boom, done deal.
Man, anymore in Colorado, anybody who kills an elk in any state with a bow, rifle, whatever, it's a feat for sure. But anybody who gets it done on over-the-counter units with a bow in Colorado, it's, like you said, the backcountry is getting pretty popular. Elk hunting in general is getting pretty popular. This year, 2020, with the whole coronavirus, everybody's got a little bit more time. You know, plans changed in other areas, so now they got to figure out backup plans. So they're hitting elk states and whatever, getting into early September hunts. Like, 2020 is crazy in itself, but man, I commend people that can get it done on over-the-counter units because the pressure is probably at an all-time high right now, I would imagine.
Yeah, and if you're not picky, it's doable. You know what I mean? I've seen a bunch of buddies online. Like, I'm like, oh, man, they, you know, if people are doing pretty well this year, it seems. You know, in these OTC units, it's as long as you're not overly picky. I mean, don't go in there thinking you're going to shoot a 350 bull. Like, you know, if you do, congratulations. But, man, that's a
one
in 10 people's lifetimes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Colorado. No. Yeah. OTC. Colorado. That's an extremely rare thing. But if you're willing to shoot anything that, you know, that's legal in there, your chances are okay. Okay. Still not great, but yeah.
Yeah.
Doable.
Yeah. I saw your buddy Joe. He just shot a pretty good smoker bull. Was that Colorado?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was Colorado, and that was OTC as well.
Wow. Do you know what that scores?
You know, he said he checked it out. And he said that he got it at 334 and I think 7/8, something like that.
Wow.
But then when he went into the taxidermy, he's like, I think you measured something wrong. He's like, it's a bit bigger than that. So they're 335 is going to be like the minimum, I would say. But you know, he could be getting up into the, you know, mid 340s.
That's an amazing.
I know, insane.
Bull. Yeah,
I know. It was crazy. He called me. It was actually my birthday that day where he, you know, I was back home with the family. It's my birthday and I get this FaceTime call. Like, what the hell is this kid calling me for? And he's like, oh, happy birthday. And I'm like, you're not calling me for my birthday, bud. And what's going on? And I'm like, you shot something, didn't you? And he just turns the phone around. I'm like, oh, dear God. That thing is a monster.
Wow.
So, yeah, he pummeled a big one. And that was his first day hunting elk as well. So,
jeez.
You know, for the season. Yeah, yeah, because he was on a muley hunt for a while and was getting after pronghorn as well.
Yeah, I saw he had success with the muleys. And, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, he got a good muley as well this year. That kid's crushing it. So,
I'd say Team Joe and Team Fred are doing pretty well for 2020. It's a good year.
Yeah, I got a couple whitetail hunts with him. I'm like, you know what, dude, if you see anything big, you're calling me over to your stand because you're done. You're cut off at this point. You're killing so many big animals. Look at everybody jealous.
it's the hunting bucket theory. I feel like, I don't know if I've talked with you about it before, but basically I've heard it. I didn't make this up, but I've seen it in other places. It's like your bucket's like slowly filling over the years, and those years where you don't have success, your bucket's just filling up a little bit more. And then when you go another year and then you get a little bit more in the bucket, and then finally that bucket gets full and then you have really good success. And that might be take a couple years, but I feel like it's a really good theory.
I like it. It's kind of karma-esque. It's you feel like you start building up. You're like,
I'm due.
Because you need success eventually. So the hunting god's got to be at some point saying, you know what? If we don't get this guy an animal, he's going to call it a quit. So
exactly.
See what we can do here.
Exactly. So you have other hunts planned. Sounds like some whitetail hunting.
Yeah. So I got Kansas. I drew a Kansas tag and did the South Dakota. So I do that pretty much every year. So that'll be start getting into that more towards the end of October, kind of switching between those two states. Got to get out there and get some cams up, but know both those areas really well. So I'll have that, and that'll, you know, typically hit that real hard in the beginning of November to the mid, you know, the rut and whatnot. Still didn't get anything in Arizona in January, so I may head back in December for that, and then a potentially a Mexico Carmini whitetail hunt again. And I do have a Colorado cow elk hunt also, and that's one I usually take my son with. He's 5 years old now, so it's kind of a fun thing for him. If we, again, with two elk in the freezer, if we see something, great. If not, we're just sitting around the campfire, and, you know.
Yeah, still a good time.
The experience. Yeah, exactly. So, a bunch more hunts in 2020, and, you know, everything gets filled in between there, between upland and duck hunting as well. So, you know, going to keep after it.
Yeah, you're a busy man. You're a busy man. I love it. Well, it's cool to see you getting your son involved. How old is he now?
He's 5. He just turned 5.
That's cool. Yeah, that's got to be. And you started taking him out, like, maybe not hardcore hunting, but you started doing that, like, a year or two ago, right?
Oh, man, we were taking him, you know, I would either have him on my back on, like, you know, one of those little kid carriers, or my wife would, and we would take him out grouse hunting with us, where one would stay back, and, you know, I'd work the dog, and you know, one of us would have the gun, and gosh, maybe we started him maybe about 2 with that.
That's sweet.
So, yeah, and then, you know, my daughter, she's 3 now, so she's, you know, she's the same thing, you know, get her out as much as we can as well, and, you know, just had him out fishing, and I actually took my son out just doing a, I don't know, we didn't go too far from Denver, just down the closest OTC unit, and just took him out archery elk. And, you know, he thought it was funny as hell. So every, like, 3 steps, he was like, Dad, you got to call again. That's why they're not coming in. So, yeah, dude, whoever's in that canyon with me, oh, my God, they had to lose their mind. Like, who is this idiot calling every 3 steps? So I apologize to anybody out there that was heard some idiot screaming every 3 steps, but that was me.
Hey, it appeases the kids, and if they like it, they're going to want to spend more time out there, and that's what it's all about, right?
Yep. That's exactly it.
I love it. Well, let's dive into your bighorn sheep hunt, man. Like, following along with that, that was just really cool country. I mean, amazing country, but, man, looking at some of the photos, it's like, holy cow, this – I'm a little scared for Fred. It's like, geez, this is some crazy terrain. This is pretty wild.
It was full on. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And the unit that I drew that tag, I'm really familiar with. And it is. It's about as nasty as it gets. It's super cliffy. You know, I mean, I have a rock climbing background. That's one of the reasons I moved out to Colorado. So I felt comfortable in there doing that stuff. But still, you know, it was the amount of work. I've never been in better cardio and my legs, and never been in better shape in my life. It got full on. So I found out when we all find out, it was the end of May, and I was up in that area shed hunting, and me and some of my buddies were out there, and they're like, oh, you know what, today the sheep, we should know if we got our sheep tags and whatnot. And my buddy looks and he's like, nah, I didn't get it. I'm like, all right, I'll look. And I look, and sure enough, it's just like, you know, you pulled your tag.
Well, and that feel like.
Well, it's insane because we're sitting there, and I'm like, well, this just turned into a scouting trip from a shed hunting trip to a scouting trip. You know, I was pumped, but it was also nervous, and I'm like, because I just knew the pressure I was going to put on myself with this thing to be successful. So it was every single weekend. I mean, it was some 3 or 4 day weekends from the end of May there straight throughout the summer. I think we racked up, I think it was just about 30 days of scouting.
Wow.
Is what that ended up being. And then actual days hunting in August was 21. So it was about 51 days trying
Holy
to find
cow.
these animals. Yeah, it was nuts. There's so much to that story I need to write down. Like, I did not tag out. So, you know, I came out of it. I wanted to be the better person and be like, oh, that was a great experience and all this. There's still parts of that hunt I'm like, I hated every second of it. There's other parts I loved, you know, but it was a bit bitter coming out of it. There's no doubt about it. I ended up, you know, shooting a really good one, and, you know, I'd actually had some of it on video where that shot went in, and I, you know, consulted with some other guys that were guides, like sheep guides, and everybody's like, this is a dead animal. Well, I mean, the amount of time we ended up putting in looking for this thing, you know, we went in, had other buddies come in, you know, we followed blood for a bit, ended up grid searching this area, you know, then even waited, and that we did that for 3 days, then waited a couple days, came back into that area to see if, you know, if there was any crows flying over, if we could hear coyotes, anything. I mean, anything and everything we could possibly do. I mean, I have all my Onyx, like, we're, you know, just doing the tracker on that. and it just looks like this giant blob by like 2 miles.
Yeah,
wide.
You gritted it.
Yeah, so it, you know, and couldn't find them, and that just kind of blew the season up. Yeah, it was painful. I felt terrible, A, for not finding the animal, and you know, but B, just not figuring out why he didn't go down.
It's an archery tag, right? That's got to be a really tough pill to swallow, especially, I mean, putting in the time, all the scouting and everything, and to think you put a good shot on it, but man, I look at bighorn sheep and holy cow, those things are barrels, man. They are just absolutely like tanks, man. They got to be tough to take down, I imagine.
I guess some of the guys I talked to are like, oh, they're nothing, you know, they're nothing compared to an elk. And then I see some, you know, and I see both elk I shot this year die under 30 yards. I'm like, well, it's the same shot I shot on this guy, and
yeah,
he ran for the hills. I mean, so I don't know. I can't quite figure out what happened. But no matter what, you know, I take the blame for it, and I'm just bummed about it. But again, you know, this is part of what we do, and this is part of what we have to accept as well, as long as you put every last bit of effort into it to, you know, make sure you find them. But
yeah,
sometimes you walk out empty-handed.
Well, that's the thing. I was talking with a buddy about this the other day. It's like, if I make a bad shot on an animal, knowing that I took a bad shot or a low percentage chance at killing this thing, that's the worst. And
oh, yeah.
But on the other hand, like you take a shot and you don't kill the animal, but you had 100% confidence knowing that you had a clear shot. It was a good broadside, or you felt very confident in where you could place that arrow, and you still don't end up finding him for some whatever reason, could be just losing the track job or running out of blood or just a freak of nature. It hurts, but it's not, it's like you said, you did everything you could to try to find that animal and you took a good shot on the animal. Sometimes the cards just don't fall in that favor, and that's just nature. I mean, the wolf doesn't get the kill every time. The mountain lion doesn't get the kill every time. Unfortunately, it's just part of what it is, but it does happen. We're a reasoning predator versus, you know, wolves and other carnivores. But if we take that shot knowing we reasoned very well that it was going to be a high percentage, it takes a little bit of the sting off, I guess. It still sucks.
Yeah, it does. It does. if you could truly say to yourself, like, hey, listen, I did everything I could, it's going to sting. But yes, at least you feel like, oh, man, you know, I wasn't trying to squeak it in, or, you know, you're doing something unethical in your own mind. Like, as long as you could honestly say that to yourself, yeah, it does feel a bit better, but God. I'm still bitter. So there it goes.
What did a typical day look like for you on that hunt? I mean, were you going, like, setting up a spike camp at a certain elevation and then hiking even further up and then just doing a shit ton of glassing? Or what's that look like on a day-to-day basis?
It just varied. Okay, so like one of the areas I really liked, I didn't want to get anywhere near their bedding or where they were at. So I'd hike up the valley, and I think from where the truck was, that was about, gosh, I think it was 40, I hate putting wrong numbers on it, but it was about 4,200 to where we
like
would
vertical
set up.
Feet climb?
Yeah, yep. And then from there, we'd be in the valley floor. And, you know, depending on that day, it would be 12 up above that. And just going up, cresting up over these ridges. And, I mean, you know, it was just below 14ers type of thing. That would be a day. And, I mean, it would be all day. And then you'd just be glassing. And, you know, if you're not seeing anything by midday, maybe you're bumping the next ridge. Sometimes if we thought we knew where they were and we were able to pattern them a little bit, we would get up on the way high, you know, maybe camping at about 12 and a half, and then you're carrying water up with you because there's never water up that high. And we would camp up that high and then just kind of maneuver from there. But it varied a ton because we were moving around so much, just trying to find these herds. And there was a particular – there was three in there that I was really willing to shoot. You know, there was times you would find a band of them, and you're like, well, that's not it, you know. So you would just either move on to the next spot, knowing the other ones probably weren't close, or there were long, long, brutal days. There was no doubt about it. That was definitely some of the hardest hunting I've ever done.
What in Colorado, isn't there, is it like some other states where it has to be like a full curl or a certain measurement?
Yeah, Colorado's easy go with half curl, which is
okay.
Nothing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could, the majority of the ones you see out there, I mean, not the majority, those, you know, the youngins, but yeah, there's a ton out there that you could shoot that are half curl. But, you know, being that this is a tag, it's not a once in a lifetime, but man, by the time I draw this tag again, I don't know if I'm going to be in shape enough to be able to, you know, do this or, you know, be young enough, have the young enough legs to be able to do it. But, I was trying to go for something special for sure. That was the mentality.
I thought bighorn and moose, and maybe I guess I'm wrong, but like that's not a once in a lifetime, or is it just male that's once in a lifetime? Or
moose, you get it, once you get the bull tag, that's it.
Okay.
I think you can still get cow tags with that. And then bighorn, no, I think you still just go back into that draw, but it's, you know, you're waiting. I think you got to wait a couple years before you could actually get the weighted points. Whoever's listening to this, don't quote me on this.
No, I think you're right there. You got to have a couple years of points just to get into the game. And then once you're in the game, you're kind of at like 0 points. And then you go up from there.
So the chances are pretty low. Yeah, the chances are pretty low of drawing again. But, it could happen. But I don't know if I want it to happen. At least not in that unit, you know, maybe somewhere else. But that's a pretty tough unit that was in. So
yeah. Now, with the point system, doesn't it kind of work as like a, like you just have more tickets in the bucket sort of thing? It's not like a, not like deer and elk where you have this kind of based on demand or how many points to get it. It's just like sheer, like if you have 5 points, let's say going into that tag and somebody else has 1 and this guy has 25. I mean, the guy with 1 can still get it, right? He just only has a very limited chance of getting drawn.
Yeah. So, deer, elk, all the other stuff, that's just preference. Whoever's got the highest number, they're going to get, and they choose this unit, boom, the highest people with the most preference points, they draw those units. This is more a bonus point, which like a lot of other states do. It's exactly what you're saying. So you have to go 3 weighted points, and so you don't draw those first 3 years. And then after that, it's essentially, I know it's a lot more convoluted, the math that behind this, but it's like zero, like, just for, make it easy. Okay, zero, you get 1 chance in there. You know, if you have 1 point, then you actually have 2 chances in there. Because I met a guy the year before in this unit. I was just out running some trails, and I saw him with a kafaru pack on. I'm like, ooh, well, you're a hunter. So I talked to him. He drew that tag for the sheep tag with 3 weighted, 0 above that. So just 3-0.
Really?
Yeah, it was. I mean, the odds were astronomical, but that's what that's what he drew it with. And there's guys with 318. And aren't drawing the tag. So yeah, exactly like you said, you can draw it, your chances are way lower.
That's cool, man. Well, that's a cool hunt. I'm sure there's just a ton of memories. I'm sure your mental game probably picked up a bit, because it's not only is it physically like taxing and demanding, but you get up there for those long hours, or you get up to a spot and you might not see something for the whole day. There might be fog rolling in or clouds, or you just can't see. I bet that takes a toll on you mentally as well.
Oh, 100%. Like I went in for the last 8 days of the season after we did all the searching for that one, and the first 6 days in, I didn't see anything. So I'm sitting there and I'm losing my mind. I'm like, there's just no rams in here. I'm like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm staying, because this is it. This may be the only time you hunt bighorn sheep. So yeah, there's definitely that mind game of staying in. It's not like getting in and bugling elk and you hear them most days and there's many days that go by that you just don't see them. And I knew I was screwed with this whole thing. The day before the opener, I go up and I was in a couple days before, but it was the day before the opener. I had a buddy coming in to meet me that night. I'm sitting up top on the saddle, just glassing around, and I hear this like just crashing. And I'm like, oh, geez, what is this? Up comes 7 rams that walk by me, and I have yet to post it on Instagram. I really need to. But again, the bitterness is just kind of holding me back from posting some of these images. But I have, just sitting there with my phone in my hand, they walk 13 feet away from me, all seven. I'm just dead still. I have the wind in my favor. They don't know what I am. So they walk by, no concerns. They're feeding. And I'm filming this whole thing, and one of them was a shooter for sure.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, this is the day before opener. And I'm like, that's
teasing
it. You. Nobody gets this lucky. You get this once in a lifetime to have a 13-yard shot on something like this. And you just got it the day before the season. So I knew I was screwed after that.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's got to be cool. But it's like, yeah, like the chances of that happening again are probably pretty slim.
But it was awesome to see. It was so cool to be that close to those animals.
Oh, they're just amazing creatures. I came down from a shed hunt. This was like in 2016. I was out pretty new to elk shed hunting. Didn't know this particular area. Me and a buddy from Michigan, he'd just driven out and he was running on low sleep and just not used to the altitude. And we hike into this basin like two, 3 miles in. It's just high, gnarly terrain. And we didn't end up wanting to come out the way we went in, so we're like, oh, well, we can take this shortcut, you know, quotation mark shortcut. And we basically drop into like sheep or get into this like really cliffy stuff, sheep country, and it was just brutal, nasty terrain. I ended up finding a bighorn sheep, a dead skull, deadhead.
Oh, nice.
Which is pretty sweet.
Wow.
Amazing how heavy those things are, man. Just like all the weight. I mean, just built like tanks. But it is definitely some gnarly country, and they're amazing animals where they live and how they can get around those rocks and just cliffs. And it's like, what are they eating? Where are they laying? Like, it's just, I don't understand it completely, but they're just amazing creatures.
Yeah. To watch them traverse a mountain and the speed that you're like, you're looking at that, I'm like, that would take me all day. And you just knock that out in 20 minutes. It's wild. Yeah, there's some powerful animals there, for sure.
It's like they defy like being able to slip off a rock that you and I would just go sliding to eternity.
Yep.
They can. It's like the littlest little like hold, and their like hard hoofs somehow just can hold it. I just don't understand it. It's just wild.
No, they definitely defy all physics, and you know it just does not make sense. But they do it somehow. They do it.
They do it. That's for sure. I want to talk to you a little bit about Hawaii. You hunted there. That was earlier this year, right? Like early in 21, or was that late 2019?
No, that was this spring. We got caught there. Poor us. But yeah, I took the whole family there. We got stuck there because of COVID.
Oh no!
But it was awesome. I mean, there's no better place in the world to be stuck. If you're gonna be stuck and you're like, I have endless animals I could shoot. If the grocery stores just shut down, we're fine. There's going to be no issues here. Yeah, so we went in the spring, and we're supposed to stay for a month. But we ended up staying for about a month and a half. They were just they'd call us up. United would be like, oh, by the way, you don't have a flight. So we're like, oh, super, okay. We'll see if we can extend our stay.
Oh, another hunting
day. There's
just
no choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So there was absolutely no complaints about staying longer. But yeah, it's, you know, I go to the Big Island. I know you can hunt most of the islands there, and you can hunt. You know, it's sheep, goat, and pig on the Big Island, and you know there's a good amount of public land. You just got to kind of figure it out because you can hunt year round there, which is the beauty of it. But they do it different, like where each little chunk of public land is almost like it's almost be like its own GMU with its own set of rules. Like, you know, some you could hunt on just weekends, some are just weekdays, some you could only hunt with a bow. You know, some is everything, all of the above. Some you can only take one animal, you know, per day, type of thing, or some's unlimited. So it's just how that, what if they're trying to eradicate them in a certain area.
Okay.
You know, they're just typically using hunters to kind of keep the populations where they want it. But man, it's a target rich environment. You know, did real well when I was there, and by the end was getting real choosy. Like, do we need meat, you know, or is this, you know, an animal I really, you know, want to take home type of thing. So it was good. It's absolutely amazing. And that's the beauty of something like that, is you can take the family. You know, you do an Airbnb, VRBO type of thing, rent a house for a while. You know, you can rent a car and just get around. And it's just a typical car to get you the most of the hunting spots. And then, you know, I would hunt the mornings and then just go hang out with the family in the afternoon and evening. Just go to the beach when we were allowed there. You know, after a while with Corona, we couldn't. But, you know, just kind of do that type of thing. So it's a great place to go with the family, you know, where everybody's going to be super happy.
Well, and it seems like a really good option for, because like I'm not, like I hunted turkeys a little bit last year, but I'm not a big turkey guy in general. And then Colorado doesn't have a spring bear season. So it's like, I don't know, like I just feel like it's a good opportunity to, one, to get a lot of shots on goal, target rich environment, and a lot of public land. And then really just like practice maybe some of the things that we don't always get to do, like stalking and just kind of hone in some of that stuff without some of the pressure, I guess. I don't want to say like there's a lot of pressure to kill stuff, but like it's just different when you maybe are going after an exotics or whatever. You kind of feel the same way?
Yeah, and that's the beauty of this. I would say there is no better investment, especially for a beginning, you know, archer, like a beginning bow hunter that really is obsessed and wants to get into this. I mean, I can't think of a better place because you could screw up endless stalks per day, you know, trying to chase these animals. And they're a little bit easier. I mean, I don't want anybody in Hawaii getting pissed off at me, but, you know, it's certainly not, you know, hunting a high country mule deer. You know, let's be honest, they were previously, barnyard animals that were just kind of released on this island. I mean, yeah, they've been feral for a long time, but, you know, it's not extremely tough to chase these animals. I mean, the sheep are, I'll give the sheep some credit. They got some eyes on them and definitely could sense you good. And same thing with the pigs. Goats, you just go and then you bah, and they're going to come to you. That's the one to start out with, you know, if you really want to kind of get your, you know, get your feet underneath you. But yes, it is. It's a target-rich environment. You can go out and get a ton of stalks in. They're delicious, all three of them. They're phenomenal eating. And it just does, you know, because like we were talking about earlier, you know, with like calling for elk, like it's repetition. And that's what this is. Whereas, you know, you may get one decent shot at an elk a season, you know, maybe one decent shot at a mule deer or get a really good stalk where you, you know, you should be able to get a shot off. If you're a lucky one, there's seasons I've gone without that. Like that's not the case in Hawaii. You're going to get in there and you're going to get after them for sure. So I think it's a great investment for any hunter.
That's cool. And what about like other hunters? I mean, where you run, I mean, obviously it's just not a big of an issue because you've got, it sounds like a pretty good amount of land, a lot of animals to go after, but what did the hunting pressure look like? Did you run into anybody? Were you seeing a lot of people?
Yeah, there's this one spot we go to, that you get tags for. There are some units that they still do the tags. That's pretty well known for goat. And you'll see a lot of guys out there, hunting that. But man, I'll tell you, everybody was so cool. Like I thought I was going to catch so much shit. Cause like, all right, you know, here's this typical, you know, mainlander coming in trying to shoot our animals. But I'll tell you, everybody was super cool, you know, and I know a guy that was there and I went out and hunted with him a little bit. And you know, he's very knowledgeable and been hunting since he was a little kid on the island. And so I just, you know, met him through social media and, you know, talking to him for some years now, cause I've been there a couple times now. And, no, I mean, you see people, but no, nothing too wild. Like, you know, a lot of these areas you drive to and you park and they'll have like a little parked off there. And if I saw another truck or a car there, I'd just go to the next spot and go, you know? So no, I don't feel like I was stepping on anybody's toes and vice versa. It wasn't too bad.
Is it one of those things where like you can hunt all day and like animals are moving all day, or is it kind of like just mornings and evenings and you might like work a little bit during the day? What does that look like?
I mean, I think the best bet is always, you know, the morning and evenings. But no, I was getting after goats midday too. They'll kind of move around, and you know, they make a lot of noise. So it's almost like you're not calling necessarily like you are with elk. But I would sit up on a little area and just sit there and wait a little while, and then you hear like off in the distance, and then you're like, okay, cool. So then you kind of work that way, and it can be really thick, so it can be tough to find them sometimes. But if they're talking to each other, it's not bad. But no, you could kind of push all day. Definitely pig, it seems like it was an evening thing. Like all the ones I got were, I mean, just as soon as that sun went down where you got that half hour of last light, that's where I got all those. So they, unless you just, you know, happen to be walking by and you stumble upon some, just kind of bedded up, they seem to be just an evening type of thing. But goat and sheep, no, I was shooting them midday as well.
You should be the Fred Goat Nut Boehm and start a goat talking app.
Start teaching people how to call.
Calling.
Good Lord. Yikes.
You could be the Paul Madel of Hawaii.
I know, right? Oh, my God.
I love it. How about axis deer? Have you ever hunted those?
No, and that's, I was going to try to do that this year, but apparently they shut that down on Lanai for
what?
Corona. But no,
oh, okay.
They're not even doing, you know, the buddy I talked to over there, they're still quarantining in between inner island travel. So they're pretty locked down there. Yeah, so, you know, if I did that and went to Lanai, then I would have to stay there for 2 weeks, and I don't know. So it just ended up being too much of a hassle. So we were talking about going back to the Big Island this spring, potentially. I don't know. Yeah, we'll just have to see how all this madness, what goes down with it and whatnot.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's real cool. I've been wanting to check out Hawaii for a while, so thanks for kind of just
do it,
throwing me some tips and
do
what
it,
you've
do
what expenses.
Yep, don't hold up on it. You know, it's one of those things you'll never regret. It's super cool.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to make that happen. Sounds really fun. I definitely want to kill an axis deer, so I want to do that.
Yeah.
Seems pretty fun. Have you switched? I know probably with the sheep hunting, you had to probably add some different gear or different items to the pack, or I don't know, maybe not. But like, have you switched up any like kind of major stuff in the last year or so? Kind of with elk hunting, with deer hunting, with goat hunting, sheep hunting, whatever. Have you switched anything up?
Not too much. You know, maybe just switching like brands of filters, going over to a Katadyn, a little bit easier to pump. But no, otherwise, you know, it's kind of been the same thing, you know, switch bows up, but, you know, wouldn't say one's better than the others. One bow shot better for me this time, you know, this year, and just minor things. You know, one of the big things I did switch over to, and I'm not sponsored or anything by these guys, is just I shoot those Sever broadheads, and they have just been destroying animals for me. So
I switched to those too. Shot my mule deer with that.
Dude, yeah. I'll tell you, I've never seen the blood trails I've seen with those blades. And no, I really dig them. You know, everything about them. I like the fact that the whole blade goes inside the ferrule, so there's nothing hanging out where you're catching it on grass and stuff when you're going in for the stalk if you're loaded up.
Yeah.
You know, just that. But otherwise, you know, and I guess the only other thing is maybe like the tripod. I went over to an outdoorsman pistol grip head on that, and that thing's been spectacular so far, just for glassing. But you know, everything else, I've kind of gotten honed in over the years, and been really happy. You know, just what I've been using.
Very nice. And I haven't really paid attention to it too much, but as far as like the Pneuma camo, have they come out with any like new Western stuff or anything along those lines?
They're working hard at that. So they came out with a new pattern this year, is the Kaza, which that's what I've been using, and I'm going to use that for whitetail. I'm going to use that for everything, for the mountains. That stuff is just, I think it's awesome. But yeah, they're coming out with it. There's definitely going to be some new stuff coming out for 2021 that they've been working hard, and I've been doing some testing for them. They came out with some packs, and I've been using those suckers, and you know, they're holding up really well. You know, they're going to be coming at, yeah. So they've been coming out with a few things. Some of the Marine, I love the Merino. I don't know. Like I think those guys stuff, and that whole, you know, guarantee for life, no questions asked type of thing. There's something about that. Cause I mean, we all beat the hell out of our hunting clothes. And just the fact that, you know, you got to, I don't know, those guys there, and you're like, hey, you know, I tore a hole in this, and it was probably my own damn fault, but you know, they're awesome about it. And like, take care of you. So I don't know. Yeah, they're coming out with a bunch of stuff. They're going full bore. So
nice.
You know, pumped to see what they're doing.
Yeah, but you know, really, you kind of brought that on the radar for me, and I've been checking out some different stuff. I love Sitka. I mean, it's good gear. I mean, I've worn it for a long time, but there's also a lot of other companies out there that are really making some cool good stuff. So I'll have to look into that Pneuma a little bit more as well.
Yeah. And I think some of these smaller guys like Pneuma, you know, they're hungry. Like they want to, you know, they got this mentality where they are fighting the big guys. They're fighting the Sitkas, the QUs, to try to get a hold. So they're putting, you know, a ton of money into this research behind it. And, you know, they want to make the best product out there so they could get in there and be one of the competitors with those guys. So, you know, and I think some of these companies are realizing that the customer service, where maybe some of the other ones were lacking on, how important that is. And that they, you know, people spend a ton of money on this stuff, and they want to be known. They're going to be, you know, they want to know that they're going to be taken care of.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't
100%. In your photography stuff, you constantly, are you switching anything up with that? Are you different lenses, different cameras? Like, I know you're kind of the wizard on that, and I don't know much about it, but like, any of that stuff change at all?
Yeah, I mean, I switch up some lenses. I've been shooting a Sony A7 R2 for a bunch of years now, and it's, you know, when it comes down, sometimes if I get asked, like, you know, with equipment, what do you go with? And, you know, there's a saying with, you know, date the body, marry the lens type of thing. So, yeah, buy the most, like, the nicest lenses out there that you can. But the body of the camera, it could be, you know, a couple generations back, and it's good to go. But, no, I picked up a couple new lenses that I really like to work with, you know. I don't know how in-depth you want to get with the technical side, but, you know, went with some prime lenses I like to shoot with a lot, and got some, you know, a higher, bit more expensive, bit nicer glass for, you know, good wide angle with a real fast aperture on it for some night photography. But, you know, I'll switch up some things, but honestly, man, anybody looking to get into it out there, don't feel like you have to spend a lot of money. That's not where it's at. The camera is not going to make your photography. It's going to be your composition, knowing how to use that camera, trying to tell a story through your imagery. Like, that's what it really comes down to. So,
yeah,
you know, the equipment is irrelevant.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we talked about it last time on when I had you on, I don't know, a year ago or whatever last, but you have that really good series on your website, like Hunting Photography Series, and it dives into a number of different parts and really kind of walks you through, like, what you should be looking for and gear, and then also, like, I don't know, different ways to portray an image and telling a story and all the different things you talk about. It's really good. I recommend people checking it out.
Well, appreciate it. Yeah, yeah, and I'm going to try to continue that a good bit more. I kind of been slacking on the blog side of things, just been honestly hunting a ton and doing a lot, getting, you know, more and more in depth into photography, and sometimes I kind of forget to try to share that, because I like that part of it too, is, you know, just being able to be a resource if people had questions on it, you know, because I love to see other people with their photography, and, you know, there's some just absolute killers out there with it, and, you know, young guys starting up with it that are really excited about it, and I'm blown away by some of the stuff I see out there every day. So, you know, if there's anything, I got to get better about it, because, you know, hopefully I can, you know, if anybody had a question on it, you know, that some of these tutorials would help out, or at least get some people started if they had the curiosity.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Like, you've obviously been doing photography for a number of years. You probably, in your early years, you probably looked up to people or followed some people, and you're like, I really like the way this style is or how they do this. And at this point, since you're many years into it, and honestly, you're probably you are the best photographer I know, just following along with and everything. Like, do you take any inspiration from other people, or are you at the point of, like, you're just kind of honing your own kind of style and craft, or, like, where do you fall into that mix?
Oh, God, I always look, you know, people always inspire me, like other guys out there that do destroy what I do. There's no doubt about it. You know, I also try to develop my own style where I don't feel like I'm taking somebody else's hard-earned, you know, their style and saying, trying to, you know, take it for my own and, like, well, maybe people don't know who this guy is, so if I feel his exact, like, I don't like doing that. Like, having, like, you know, the moods I want to set for the image and just kind of do my own thing with that. And I think in the beginning, there's nothing wrong when guys are starting out. They, like, you know, imitate somebody else's stuff. There's, you know, that's fine. Like, you know, start by, it could teach you a lot. Like, okay, how am I going to, you know, craft this when I get into post-production? You know, what kind of color grading am I going to do to set this type of mood that I want to do for this image? Like, so if people want to do that in the beginning, I think it's great. But eventually, you know, everybody, you're going to want to find your own thing. But no, I'm always looking at other guys. And a lot of times it's not even hunting photographers, though there are great ones out there. But it's, you know, guys that are totally different fields. Like, there's this guy, Short Stash. He's, God, he does a lot of surfing stuff. I think he's in Cali. I don't know. I think he hates hunters, if I'm not mistaken. Doesn't matter. Whatever it is.
You should
sure
DM him.
You know. Yeah, exactly. I'm sure he'll block me instantly. But, no, I'm just kidding. Maybe he doesn't. But, you know, just his composition, like, unreal, and his color grading, and just how he could set a mood and where he's placing people in his imagery. And, you know, there's another guy, I think it's Fursty, F-U-R-S-T-Y, and he doesn't have any people. It's just strictly landscapes, but, like, that, the way he could set a mood with that, with his color grading, like, strictly in post-production. I'll look at an image, and I'm like, well, it's not – I think anybody could take that image, but, like, what he does in post-production is unbelievable. And some of these guys doing the compositing, you know, I'll follow that where that's more like manipulation of the images. I don't know if you saw like the one where I did, I was like climbing up a tree to hang my whitetail stand where I'm just perpendicular to the tree, just walking up it, like just getting ideas of all
cool.
other people. And, you know, cause I know that side of it, how to do it, but like just inspiration of like, okay, if you see something else, how would you interpret it into your own imagery and your own thoughts? So no, I'm constantly on Instagram, just, you know, following new people that inspire, because I think that's the you could
never stop learning.
Stale.
Yeah,
no, that's it, and you could get stale pretty quick if you're just doing your own thing over and over again. So
I like that.
It's a great way of doing it.
I like that. That's really cool. So have you done some upland hunting so far this year, or is that kind of later in October?
That's usually a bit later. I mean, it's, you know, especially with the sheep hunt, like everything got pushed back this year, but no, I've shot a bunch of grouse with my bow, you know, so far, but no, I got, you know, I got my poodle pointer under my feet right now, just dying to get out. And no, so we have, with the family, we're going to head up to the mountains, second week in October, do a bunch of days up there, just go out grouse hunting. And then over Thanksgiving and stuff like that, you know, we'll do some other upland. We got like 2 weeks planned for that. So, you know, and then just filling in days here and there. But yeah, I got a bunch of upland planned out as well. That's going to start hitting pretty hard here in October.
I love it. I love it. And oh yeah, I wanted to ask you, Sage and Breaker, how's the company doing? Any new items? What's good with that?
Yeah, we're doing awesome. Actually, we're going to have them for the fall. We got a bunch of new stuff coming in. I probably shouldn't say exactly what it is because we're going to have, you know, this whole rollout.
Yeah, no.
But, we have a ton of new stuff. We're going to be switching out some products, adding a bunch of new stuff to the line. We're really trying to ramp that up. Definitely be looking for that real soon here. If you're on our email list or whatnot, you'll get the first crack at everything. So
yeah. And for people, we've talked about it before on the podcast, but for people who are new or haven't listened to you before, tell us a little bit about what Sage and Breaker is and where can we go to find out more info.
Yeah, Sage and Breaker, we make high-end firearm cleaning products. So we do stuff, we have our own version of what, you know, typically was called the boar snake, what we think is a better version of that, which is going to give you like the full brush and as opposed to just some, I don't know, bristles in a buffing rope. We have a different version that we feel cleans a lot better. I mean, we do a CLP that is just absolutely top notch. We do these really beautiful like heirloom, like they're meant to be passed down through the generation, gun mats made out of wax canvas, leather, and wool that you can hold all your cleaning products in, put your, you know, lay your guns out on to clean it. When you're all done, you roll up all your gear and you can throw that in the back of your truck or, you know, whatever, have that in your shop. So anything you need from top to bottom to keep your firearms running, that's what we make. And, you know, it's stuff that's just built to last the generation. So we spare no expense on it.
That's badass, man. I love it. Yeah. I'm starting to get into a little bit more just gun hunting, like rifles and stuff like that. Last year was my first rifle hunt ever. I'd had a rifle that I'd won at RMEF banquet, like in 2015 or 2016, and never hunted with it till last year. So I'm starting to, it's different for sure. I definitely love bow hunting, but as I get more into the gun side of things and rifles, I'm gonna have to pick up some of your stuff, man. I gotta get back on there and check it out.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, I'll send you some gear. So we'll connect after this.
Well, cool, Fred. It's always a pleasure, man. I always enjoy hearing about your hunts and what all you have going on. It's just fun stuff. So definitely look forward to the next time we get to chat again.
Awesome, Adam. Hey, appreciate it, as always, you having me on.
All right, and there we go. Another episode in the books. Big thanks to Fred for coming on the show. Really enjoyed that. Hope you guys did too. And man, I'm inspired. I need to get out and hunt more. I try to hunt as much as possible, but when I'm talking with Fred, it's like, man, I need to go do that, or I need to go do that hunt, or that sounded really cool. I should look into that a little bit more. And he certainly does that for me. And just following along, if you're not following Fred's work, definitely follow him on Instagram, Facebook. FredBohm.com is his website. If you want to read some of his articles, look at more of his photography. If you're a hunter and you want to step up your game a little bit on the photography side, like I mentioned in the podcast, I mean, that tutorial, that series that we talked about, I mean, it's really, really beneficial. If you're intro to photography and just want to kind of up the level of your images and really tell that story, like he said. So definitely check out some of his work there, and you won't be disappointed, I promise you. All right, well, I won't keep you too much longer. Stay after it. It can be a grind. I know it's something, this is the season that we look forward to more than anything in the world. Whether you're archery hunting for deer or elk, or rifle hunting for deer and elk or bear or whatever it may be, it's going to be a grind. It's tough. It's not easy. And we wait all year and we anticipate this time of year more than anything in the world. And just stay after it. Hunting is tough. You guys know that. I feel like I'm just like ranting and like preaching to the choir here, but stick with it. If you're getting down to the wire on your hunts, I've had so many hunts, so many times where it's just like it comes together at the last minute and you don't expect it. That stuff is reality. It doesn't always work out on the front end or right at the beginning. So if you're out there, keep grinding, keep getting after it, and really cherish these moments, because this is something we're not going to last forever. Whether the world ends or, you know, we get old and we just can't pound the mountains like we used to. Enjoy these moments. Enjoy the time. Enjoy time with family and friends and taking them out and introducing new people to hunting or wild game and just sharing in that experience. It's wonderful, it's magical, and through all the craziness in the world going on right now, it's something to look forward to and something to really cherish forever. So I hope you guys are having a successful fall, and I look forward to seeing more success photos and stuff to come. So keep getting after it. All right, and that is it. Thanks again to our partners, Expedition Archery, Skull Brew Coffee, and Outdoor Edge Knives. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll talk to you soon.